When I change my son's poopy diapers, I am reminded of so many things. I'm reminded that I don't like poop, that it's gross and stinky and nasty and yucky, and he wants to touch it, and I don't want to touch it, but somehow it's always on me, or too many times, once too many. And it's really not that bad when they're a baby. You don't really like it, but then it gets to like toddler poop, and it is yucky, nasty, grody, plentiful stuff. Ugh. But really, physically speaking, that poop is going to go into the ground and feed the earth. The earth will give us food to eat, and that food will go into products that we eat. Or food, you know, food that we eat, that food will go down our throat into our bellies. And the good stuff will stay, and the bad stuff will be pooped. So really, and all that good stuff will sustain us and give us life and allow us to reproduce and create more life. So really, physically speaking, I am that poop. Me and that poop are the same. Isn't that remarkable? What a difficult thing to come to grips with. And what does this all mean? It means that it's good that I don't like the poop. It's good. I can choose to not like poop. No big deal. It's okay. But it's good. And it's bad. It's not good. At least you shouldn't let it control you. Or really take away. And this is the other cool thing. Is it can't be so bad to just experience it. I'm experiencing life. And part of life is knowing your children, as a parent at least, knowing your children so intimately as to know their poops. It's a pretty intimate level of knowing somebody. From a physical, you know, angle. And that's cool. It's special. That's a special experience to be that intimate with my son when I change his poop. It's a good experience. It's pleasant and helpful to both of us. And can offer some really nice moments of connection with each other. And now we know with poop. Welcome back to another episode of A Simple Life with Michael Jeffries. On this podcast, we attempt to let go of all the subtext and social barriers that hold us back. It isn't about being right or wrong. We're just trying to keep it real. This episode drop marks the 2-year anniversary of me doing this podcast, which, as I reflect on that, is pretty... It It makes me feel something. I didn't really know when I started this what would happen, how long it would last, if I'd get past a couple of episodes to launch the podcast. And here we are, several episodes later, 2 years later, and I still really enjoy it. And to launch year three, we are looking at a very vulnerable area of my life. I don't want to spoil the whole episode. So I guess I'll start with a little context for that cold open you just heard. That was me doing a recording a few weeks before a very large fight with my now former wife. And during that recording that I made, I was super, super, super high on marijuana. If you have never experienced someone high on marijuana, you just heard someone very high on marijuana. So just keep that in mind as you reflect back on that cold open. And before we get into the episode, I want to point out, I've sat on this recording for quite some time. I recorded it on April 4th of 2021. That date is very significant to me because April 4th of 2020 was my first day in recovery and sobriety. So that date will remain a one that stays with me throughout my life. And I'm glad that I made this recording on that day. And it's very telling that I've waited for several months here to actually upload it and press publish on this podcast episode. It is a difficult thing for me to move into this very public confession or statement of fact that I am an alcoholic and an addict. And I'm still not sure how I feel about it. I hope in the days and months and years to come, I'm glad I did this so publicly. If I'm not glad, maybe I'll unpublish the episode. So with all that said, let's get into the episode. Hi, I'm Michael. I'm an addict and an alcoholic. Today is April 4th, 2021. 1 year ago today, I got on a Zoom call with a group of people and said those words for the first time and really meant them. I grew up in a very conservative religious home. Both of my parents were teetotalers, which, if you've never heard that term, it's just a way of saying they didn't drink alcohol. The only times I can remember really being around alcohol as a child growing up were at extended family functions. My memories at those functions were really that everybody drank except for my parents. And certainly when I wasn't at extended family functions, we hung out with a lot of conservative religious people who didn't drink as well. Those are some of my earliest memories with alcohol. I can remember the first time I had alcohol. I was with a friend. We were at his house and we snuck a beer from the fridge and drank it. And I can remember not really liking the taste, but I liked the excitement and the adventure of doing something forbidden. I don't remember exactly how old I was, but I know I was less than 14. And then another early memory with alcohol was at my uncle and aunt's house. We were having dinner together. they were drinking wine, and my uncle asked my dad, would he like some wine with his dinner? And my dad said, yes, just a little. And I can remember being very angry about that, and I confronted my dad because I felt like he was being a bad, in the terms that I grew up in the Christian tradition that I grew up in, I felt he was being a bad witness by drinking alcohol. And there's a lot more context I could give to that, but I'm going to skip over that. He was, I remember, it's a vivid memory, he was surprised and a little bit flabbergasted, but very kind and gracious, telling me he was sorry and he didn't realize that that would be so bothersome to me, that he would drink some wine with his dinner. And funny enough, later on in that visit, we were spending multiple days with my uncle and aunt. That very bottle of wine had been left on the table. And I can remember sneaking sips of that wine. And I didn't like it, but I kept on drinking sips of it because I wanted to taste it again. I the adventure of the forbidden had a real draw for me. I can remember being a senior in high school and being in a play with a civic group in Southwest Michigan. And I think I might have been the youngest person in the play. Most people were either in college or they were, you know, grown-ups or whatever. And I can remember being invited to a frat party. And I thought that was so cool. I'd always watched movies about frat parties and had heard about frat parties. And I'd gotten an invitation to a frat party. And I called my dad and I said, hey, I've been invited to a frat party and I want to go. Is that okay with you? I asked permission of my dad point blank. Being, you know, 18 years old or whatever. I mean, that's the way I was raised. I had to ask for permission about things like that. And he said, there was a pause on the phone, and he said, yeah, it's okay with me if you go, or something to that effect. I went, and I had such a good time. I got plastered. I drank so much beer. I had always been afraid of hitting on women. I was afraid of rejection. And all of a sudden, I wasn't afraid of that. And I was saying things to women that I heard the words come out of my mouth, but I was surprising myself that I was saying those things. It's a vivid memory. And I was dancing, and I'd always been afraid of looking funny dancing. And then those kind people that had invited me to that frat party made arrangements for me to sleep on one of their couches and made sure I got back there. They drove me and helped me get back to my car in the morning. That was my first experience that I can remember being drunk. And there was many more after that. Those are some of my early memories. And that's really... you know, there was some other parties when I was college age, and I drank when I could. There's other stories that come to mind that I could tell, but I'm not going to go to all of them. I never thought of myself as having a particular predisposition, or like alcoholics will sometimes talk about, I've heard, going to any length to getting alcohol once they've tasted it once. And that wasn't me, I don't think. I can remember that I took a lot of opportunities to drink. And then in 2007, I got married and moved to Taiwan to go to university. And I drank quite a bit before that. But a few months into that, I became a daily drinker. At first, it was a couple of beers at night, after the day had wrapped up. And then 2008, it was, you know, a couple more beers in 2009, 2010. That first year in 2007 in Taiwan was the first time I ever tried marijuana. I had turned it down when I was a kid because marijuana would send you to hell, I thought. But then I tried it in 2007 and it made me sick. I drank a ton before I tried it. And then I had some marijuana and I got left in the room where we had been partying, this group of university students and I. And I woke up the next morning sitting upright in a chair with a with a trash can in my lap. And that is how that group of students had taken care of me that night. Whenever I'd go to parties, I'd get plastered. I love to have a good time. And 2010 or 11 is... I had some more marijuana. I had a roommate that had marijuana on a regular basis, and we would smoke together. And it was so funny to me how I can remember this vivid memory of a lot of vivid memories, apparently, related to marijuana and alcohol. Remember one of the first couple times I got marijuana, I got high off of marijuana. I thought it was hilarious how my hands looked. It was a classic, you know, and I remember being kind of out of body thinking, wow, this is exactly how I thought marijuana highs would be like. You just think everything is funny and weird and strange. And that's what it was like the first couple times I got high. And I really enjoyed it. And so it continued. I would drink every night. And when I had access to marijuana, I would smoke it. And it's funny to me now because in Taiwan it's an island and there's very severe drug laws, and that's where I smoked marijuana for the first several times. And it's also funny to me that the marijuana there was most often hash, and that's because it was easiest to smuggle hash. You know, it's small condensed marijuana. Well, then in 2012, my wife and I had finished our degree programs. We'd been in Taiwan for about 4.5 years. She never drank the way I drank, and she never smoked marijuana. And we had often fought in Taiwan about when I would drink, I'd be very insensitive to her, to our roommates. And she could see that, and she'd try and talk with me about it, and I'd just get angry with her and tell her she was being controlling and unreasonable, and that the roommates didn't mind it, and just dismiss her in an angry, argumentative, mean way. Well, we moved back to Michigan, where we're both from, in 2012, and continued to drink. And I finally got up the courage one night outside of a bar. Some people were smoking marijuana. And I asked if I could buy some. And one of them came to my house a couple days later and sold me some marijuana. And that was the first time I ever bought marijuana on my own. And that was that's less than 10 years ago now. But almost 10 years. And I really enjoyed it. And I smoked it on my own. I smoked it with friends. I was still drinking every night. And as I had continued to drink every night, it became more. And by that time, I was probably drinking 5 to 6 beers a night. And these weren't light beers. These were craft beers that had pretty high alcohol content. And I'd wake up pretty hungover and go to work. I often would end up asleep on the couch. Often the last beer had spilled over the couch, sometimes on me. And that's how my life was for several years there. I'd drink every night. fall asleep on the couch and smoke marijuana when I could. And if I had it, I would smoke a lot of it. And we had had a baby in 2013, our first child, my wife and I. And that's when my wife started to put her foot down more. She didn't want me sleeping drunk in the bed, and we fought a lot about that. She believed in co-sleeping, and I wasn't opposed to it. That's where the baby sleeps, in the bed with the parents, so that the baby could nurse throughout the night. And it sounded okay to me, but I was very angry with my wife for making this decision without me. And really, it was about her frustration and fear of me smothering the baby because I was drunk. And I thought that was ridiculous, that of course that wouldn't happen. And so we argued a lot about that. And just like in Taiwan, when I was being insensitive to roommates because I was drunk a lot, I was very argumentative and mean to her about sleeping in the bed drunk. I didn't believe I was drunk, and I wouldn't smother the baby, and I wasn't a heavy sleeper, all that stuff. Well, I became very dissatisfied with that job, angry they weren't paying me enough, and found another job. And at that job, I excelled and worked really hard. Anytime I was on business trips, I can remember everybody would go to their hotel rooms and I would go off somewhere after that happened and get beer, bring it back to my hotel room and drink it alone. And that happened several times. And I never really thought about being an alcoholic or what that meant. Or put two and two together. I had begun feeling very ashamed about drinking, and the behavior, you know, clearly indicates that I had guilt and shame, and I was trying to hide it. I still drank a lot with people. I took every opportunity to go to parties. I was a very absent partner for my wife. You know, the rationale was that she had wanted the baby, and in my mind, I thought she probably liked the baby better than me anyways. So it didn't matter that I went out at night and drank at the bar, or went to parties on my own with people who are much younger than me, who didn't have a wife and children. And I never really thought about how it would have been nice for me to just be in the house. It would have been nice for my wife to know I was there to take care of things. I could have been doing chores and cleaning up. But instead, I was either off getting drunk and high with friends, or I was doing that at home by myself. Well, in 2015, I lost that job. I had never drank or smoked on the job other than on those business trips, and that was after work days had ended. But I was very resentful and angry and fearful and dishonest. And those are all hallmarks I've learned of what it means to be an alcoholic and an addict. There's a lot of resentment in an alcoholic's life, and dishonesty, fear, selfishness. And those were all things that I can see now in my life quite a bit at that time. But in the moment, I had no idea at all that those were some of the things that were driving me to drink. So I lost that job, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I've talked about going through a midlife crisis at that time in previous episodes, and that was certainly true. And I was high all the time, and I got drunk quite a bit. I remember getting jobs and then being high doing work for those jobs. And after I'd lost that one job, that was when I kind of gave up on not being high all day every day. And I was pretty much high every day. And I lost a lot of my I wasn't full on drinking all the time like I was, I still drank a lot, you know, 5 to 6 beers a night. But it was way easier to enjoy marijuana because there was no hangover in the morning. And really, it was cheaper because craft beer is expensive. And I was spending a lot of money on beer up until that point, and I still was. And I never really put two and two together of why I didn't have any savings or why money was tight. I can remember wanting to stop being in the normal workforce and being a nomad and thinking, well, that wouldn't work because I need to have enough money to buy beer. And that sort of lifestyle wouldn't give me enough money to buy beer. And it'd be hard to get marijuana because I'd be traveling and it would be, I wouldn't know where to get marijuana on the road because it was still illegal at the time. It's interesting to look back at my life choices and the internal thought process of what was available to me in life because of my addictions and being able to recognize the control they had over me. And then I lost a friend because of my addiction. I abused their generosity. I abused their friendship. And they rightly got angry and basically said they didn't want me in their life anymore. And I was very resentful and angry about that and bewildered by that. It didn't seem like a big deal what I had done. And they were just overreacting. And sure, I'd done some things that were not smart or whatever. I could recognize that. But I was apologetic. Why couldn't they get over it? Well, they weren't over it. They're still not over it. That I know of. And then my wife told me in the fall of 2020 that if I didn't get help, that she was going to leave me. And I thought she was being ridiculous. And I was angry with her. And she said, at least I needed to go to some 12-step meetings. And so I did that. I went to some 12-step meetings. And there's some very kind people there that welcomed me. But I had not reached my bottom, and I wasn't really interested in recovery. And so I went through the motions. And then 2021 came. And I had learned some things about addiction in those 12-step meetings, but I wasn't open to it. Other than I met a man in January of 2021, and I had a clear enough mind to realize he had opened up to me and said he was a recovering alcoholic. And I really respected this man, and I told my wife, I want this man to be my sponsor. And she was excited for me. And then in March of 2021, my wife and I had a big fight, and I did some terrible things. And this wasn't the first time we had had a big fight or that I'd done terrible things. You know, as I said earlier in this episode, I was a very, very neglectful partner. I was not there for her. As an example, in the winter of 2012, and this is just one example, there are many. But this one example, my wife was coming home from an appointment, driving on I-94, 70 plus miles an hour. She hit a icy patch, and she flipped a BMW convertible 3 times. It landed upright, and she called me, and she called an ambulance. The ambulance got to her before me, and she appeared to be all right. So they took her to a McDonald's, and that's where I picked her up. And she acted a little loopy when I got there. It was kind of hard to find out which McDonald's she was because she gave me bad directions. I found her and took her home and got her to bed with our kids and then left to go to the bar that very night. And the next day, my wife put it together, and I did too, that she had a concussion. I don't know how serious it was, but she had a concussion and suffered for at least a few days. And there's a lot of shame and guilt there that I didn't even stick around the house that evening. I went out to the bar. You know, I had gone through times where I had made deals with my wife where I wouldn't have it at home, alcohol. And in those cases, I would just go to the bar every night and spend even more money. And then there'd be times when I'd break those promises and it'd start back up at home. So back to that fight in March of 2021. Sorry, March of 2000. Is this 2021? Yeah, March of 2020. See, that's the problem. I thought about scripting this episode out, and I decided not to, that it would be better if it just came out the way it was going to come out. And I knew that it'd be rambly and difficult to follow if I did it that way, but I decided it'd be more real and authentic if I did it that way. So this is a little bit rambly and disjointed because of that, but bear with me. So 2020, March, my wife and I had this terrible fight. I did these terrible things. And I left and went to stay with my parents. And my wife filed a police report. And I was legally banned from being at my home. Seeing my wife. And for a couple of months there, I didn't even see my children. And that was very difficult for me. But thankfully, I hit my bottom then. I had lost a job. I'd lost a friend. And then I lost my family. And those three things put together showed me a trend. And I realized that I was an addict and an alcoholic. And on April 4th of 2020, I called the man that I really respected and had wanted to be my sponsor, and I asked him if he would sponsor me. We had a phone conversation, and he told me about a 12-step meeting that was happening on Zoom that very night. And I went, and he came too. And I went to that same meeting every single day, or almost every single day, for 90 days at least. In fact, I still go to that meeting. They don't meet every day, but they meet regularly still, and I still go, which is wonderful. So on April 4th of 2020, I entered a life of recovery. I called myself an addict and an alcoholic and meant it. And I continue to do that whenever I go to a 12-step meeting, of which I go to many. I introduce myself as Michael, an addict and an alcoholic. And I'm very grateful to be able to do that. I'm very grateful that I have reached my bottom. And what's so wonderful is that there's this cliche saying in the fellowship that I'm a part of that says a problem shared is a problem cut in half. And other sayings like the best day drunk is worse than the worst day in sobriety. And every single day I'm in recovery, sayings like those become truer and truer to me, and they sound less like these silly cliches and more like truth that I can apply to my life. So I entered recovery, and began going to 12-step meetings and really wanting to be there. And then my wife reached out and arranged times for me to be with the kids. And I was still very early in recovery and was very fearful and resentful and angry and dishonest and selfish and fought her about many things related to the children. I thought I had a right to make decisions as their father and be a part of those decisions. And she was making decisions related to them that I didn't agree with. And I was still being argumentative and angry with her about those things. And as the months have gone on, life continues to get better. My bank account started to grow like it never had before. I became less insecure about the work I was doing and the jobs I had, and I'd always been insecure about being fired, about not doing well enough. I've talked about that in other episodes. The very reason why I started this podcast was because I wanted to face my fear of saying what I thought and sharing those feelings openly and running the risk of being rejected or thought foolish. I have, throughout the last year, have worked the 12 steps that are part of the 12-step program that I'm a part of. And with every step, my life has become clearer and better, in spite of many ups and downs. It was very difficult for me. My wife, in the fall of 2020, served me with papers of divorce. So not only was I separated from her, I was on the path to divorce, a permanent separation from her. We'd been married for 13 years at that point. And that was very difficult for me. And it still is sometimes, honestly. But the time I have with my kids now is much more limited than it ever was when I lived with my wife and with my kids. But it is so much better. Not only is my bank account growing, and I have more peace and joy and freedom and goodness in my life than years and years and years and years and years before, when I'd been in active addiction. Time with my kids is very sweet and wonderful, and I can have such a good time with them and be a good father to them. And I can get a lot of joy out of that. And before, I was very distracted, and I thought it was a big responsibility. It was a job. It was something I had to do. And now it's a wonderful thing to be able to be with my kids. And people often talk about the reasons to be sober. And my kids are certainly a part of that for me. But it goes beyond that. I enjoy being sober today. I'm still a very young addict and alcoholic in recovery. Only being a year old, I think of a baby that's a year old. They're starting to smile and sit up and coo. But they're still very young, and they're still very dependent and have a bunch of needs. And that is certainly the way I feel in my sobriety a year in. Today, I wanted to do this recording today to mark this anniversary. I was very nervous to do this recording, to share this very deep, very personal, in many ways shameful thing. And I've changed my perspective on it. It is a part of my life. I am an addict and an alcoholic. And thank goodness I reached my bottom and I am in recovery. And life is so much better on this side. even though I don't have that job that I lost, even though that I don't have that friend that I lost, and even though I'm in the process of being divorced, which is taking quite a long time, due, I think, mostly to the pandemic, COVID-19, throughout the past year. It is a long process to begin with, from what I understand, and it is very long, in my experience now, with the pandemic included. I want to be careful how I wrap this up. I don't want to use my addiction and alcoholism as an excuse for the wrongs I've done to my friend, to my former colleagues and boss, to my wife, to my kids, to anybody that I've harmed. It's not an excuse. I did those things, and I was wrong. I am very grateful that I reached my bottom. There's a lot of mixed feelings there, which I'm sure anybody listening to this can understand. Being grateful to be in recovery and to have gone through all these terrible things that got me to recovery, and being very sad that it took these things, and being very sad that I hurt so many people along the way, and did so many terrible things. I mean, I can't even count how many times I drove drunk, endangering people on the road, drove drunk with my family in the car, endangering my wife and my children. One thing that really helped me in early recovery, in the winter of 2020, not long before my soon-to-be former wife and I separated, I took mushrooms for the first time. And to be completely honest, I was very irresponsible. And the first time I took mushrooms, I was at home with our kids. They'd gone to bed, and I took mushrooms. And I'm so grateful that apparently I didn't take enough and I didn't get high. Thank goodness. Because then I took mushrooms again when my family wasn't at home, and I got high, so high. And I had the most wonderful experience, I thought. I was at peace with the world. I could enjoy the snow. I went out hiking in the snow. I played music. I thought it was the best night of my life. And in early recovery, I felt that peace with the world. I felt that goodness, that being high on mushrooms had given me. And I realized, wow, if this is what real life in sobriety is like, then that means I don't need to get high. In the last couple of years, I had become very scared of not smoking marijuana. In particular, I was such an addict that I viewed it as a medicine that would lessen this crippling anxiety that I had. And now in sobriety, early sobriety, I was realizing it wasn't a medicine. I learned in recovery through the 12-step program and through education that for an addict, when you're high or drunk or whatever your substance of choice is, that's when you can feel normal. And when you're not high or drunk, you're very anxious and resentful and selfish and dishonest and mean and fearful. And that was certainly the case for me. And I realized that I could live life, that marijuana was not a medicine for me. It was this thing that had done a lot of damage in my life. One of the things that I'm very grateful for is that no one can tell me I'm an addict or an alcoholic. It's something I choose to identify myself with. That's one of the things I love about my 12-step program, is no one can tell someone they can't be a member. Everybody chooses for themselves if they want to be a member, if they are a member. And I choose to be a member. I know I'm an alcoholic and an addict. a lot of people talk about everybody's bottom is different. I've heard stories where people just descend into a hell very quickly after trying alcohol or a drug for the first time, and there's a lot of stories about that. And mine was a very gradual decline from what I can see, a very slow boil. But I certainly did go to hell. My life was a hell, and I was bringing hell into the lives of the people I loved the most, and to the people that were in my life. And I'm so grateful to be in recovery now. And I've said those words a lot during this recording. I'm repeating myself. But that's because it's true. Trying to think of an elegant way to wrap all this up, to sum it all up. But I can't really think of anything. So I think I'm just going to wrap it up. I am an alcoholic and an addict. And 1 year ago today, my life changed. I entered recovery and have been in a 12-step program, a fellowship of people that help me and who I help. My life has changed for the better. And I am wanting to share this message because it's in keeping with the theme of the podcast of being very vulnerable. I don't know who is an alcoholic or an addict out there. Only you can decide that. If you ever want to talk about that, or want to learn more about it, or think that you could benefit from additional education, or would like to come to a 12-step fellowship meeting, many of the meetings are open to anybody, whether or not you're an alcoholic or an addict. If you just want to learn, you're welcome to be there. I want to be there for anybody I can. So feel free to visit anchor.fm/a simple life and leave me an audio message so that we can be in contact with each other. There's a lot of great things you can learn about it, whether or not you are an addict or an alcoholic. I would love to be able to share anything you'd like with you. And I guess that's how I'll wrap up this episode, is wanting to express how I feel like I have something to offer. And I didn't really feel that in active addiction. I felt like I didn't have anything to offer. And that is a wonderful feeling, to feel like I have something to offer. So with that, I'll wrap it up. And then we'll see how long it takes me to get up the courage to post this episode. You'll know how long that is between now, April 4th, 2021, and whenever this podcast goes up online. So there you go. If you just listen to that, you know me in a more intimate way, in a more vulnerable way than only a handful of people, much more intimately than the person I present as on Facebook, or even to many people in my real life. I mean, if you listen to this podcast episode, you're hearing a raw Michael Jeffries, real raw. And I think that's why, you know, in the opener, I'm not sure if I'll be glad that I did this. I hope so, but I'm just not sure, because it is a big step to be so public and so intimate and vulnerable with such a large audience. But a lot of my guests have done exactly that, and I'm grateful for that. And really, that's at the end of this episode, I am left in overall a state of gratitude. I'm so grateful. I have had such good mentorship in recovery from the very first day, over the last year and change, and going forwards. I have an incredibly tight, strong, wonderful group of people that are teaching me this new way of life and supporting me, and I have the opportunity to do the same for them. I'm so grateful that my living situation for the first several months in recovery was so ideal. And I'm so grateful to the people who made that possible for me. I'm also very grateful that I am living in a state of recovery from alcoholism and addiction. I'm a firm believer that recovery is not something that I have accomplished. It is not a goal that I have achieved. It is a state of being, a lifestyle that I choose every day, and that I every day have an opportunity to not choose. And I'm very grateful that today I am choosing that. And I'm very grateful that I am not the man I was. I'm a different man. I do not wish to shut the door on my past, but I also don't plan to hold on to my guilt and shame. Rather, I plan to learn how to be a better man through the experiences I've had and to support whoever I can in whatever way I can so that they can live a better life, whatever that means for them. In the episode, I focus a lot on the experience I had of everything, but listening back, what I feel is sympathy for my former wife, my former friend, my kids, and all the other people who suffered because of me. This story is not just mine. It's their story too. And I can't provide you their point of view on the story, but maybe they will in the future. And maybe not. But just keep in mind that this story is not just mine. That would be comforting to me. One final note I want to make this clear. While marijuana and alcohol are no longer a part of my life, I don't believe they are evil. I know many people who have very healthy relationships with them. I'm just not one of those people. I am an alcoholic and an addict. If you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, visit anchor.fm/asimplelife and leave me an audio message with your contact information. To support A Simple Life with Michael Jeffries, subscribe to the podcast, give us a rating on iTunes, or best yet, share the podcast with a friend. Thanks for listening. We'll see you down the road.